Today's podcast is sponsored by GenesisCare, national independent cancer care provider and experts in breast health, diagnostics and treatments.
Hello, welcome to the British Podcast award-winning And Then Came Breast Cancer, the series for everyone whose life has been touched by this disease. I'm Victoria Derbyshire, and my world changed back in 2015 when I was diagnosed. The Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity believes that no one should face the disease on their own and wanted to create a podcast series which would be there 24 hours a day for those dark, what am I going to do moments when your life gets changed too. We've built up a whole library where we've talked about all sorts of things like friendship, faith, fear. We've looked at the latest medical advances. We've had really raw and honest conversations about wigs and reconstruction surgery, sex, relationships, cold caps, you name it. Today we're going to talk about something that I experienced, radiotherapy. And because it often comes after chemotherapy, it doesn't always get the coverage it warrants, perhaps because it is seen as somehow easier than chemo. But for many people, radiotherapy can be an ordeal, both physically and mentally. According to NICE, the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, nearly 27,000 people have radiotherapy in this country every year for early and locally advanced breast cancer. And that's just in England alone. As always on this podcast, we ask our guests to introduce themselves. Hello.
Hello. My name's Fiona Carrington. I was diagnosed in 2019. I was 45. I have two children and a husband and two cats.
Hello, I'm Christina. I'm 62. I was diagnosed only in June this year, so it's very, very recent. I've got three children. I live with my husband. I'm a photographer and I also teach Qigong.
Which is?
A form of gentle martial art, more meditational, but most people seem to know it as Tai Chi, but really it's not the defense and attack. It's more about the mind relaxing, calming, but you get the movements as well.
Sounds divine, I have to say.
I'm Elliot Sims. I'm a consultant, a clinical oncologist, which means I supervise chemotherapy and radiotherapy, primarily for patients who've had breast cancer treatment. I live in Hertfordshire. I'm married and I've got two grown-up children.
Welcome, all of you. Thank you very much for being on our podcast. Fiona and Christina, let me start with you both. Why did you have to have radiotherapy?
I had a lumpectomy in July 2019, followed by four sessions of chemotherapy, and then I had to have 20 sessions of radio. I guess it's an extra belt and braces type effect after the chemo.
I actually had a mastectomy in July, the beginning of July. Then I found out that my lymph nodes, which were actually clear at biopsy, were actually infected, two of them. So I then had to have all my lymph nodes taken out from under my arm. Waiting for results, I think it was a few weeks. I then found out they'd been clear, the rest of the actual lymph nodes, but they still wanted to give me radiotherapy just in case it had moved. So they gave it to the lymph node on my collarbone and the chest wall behind where my breast originally was. And they also had to wait for my oncotype, which they took my infected lymphs to America, some new age lab that determines whether chemo is right for you and the genetic makeup of your cancer. And it came back very low, 6 out of 100. So they said chemo would be much more detrimental for me, but they still wanted me to have the radiotherapy. So I literally finished that just last Friday.
Oh, wow. How do you feel about that?
It was very difficult because I kept looking at all the things like my actual lymphs. The rest of them were clear. My oncotype of returning cancer was low. And I was thinking, why am I having more treatment when I don't really need it? And then it just took a lot of mental kind of effort to accept that it was one kind of more insurance plan to prevent him something they didn't know. And I think the fact that my lymphs had been clear in the beginning, I was given a grade one, stage one, and that it had moved kind of was a signal to me that it could have gone somewhere else. Yeah.
Dr. Elliot Sims, what is radiotherapy? How would you describe it in layman's terms?
Radiotherapy is X-ray treatment. So it's the same X-rays that we use to take an X-ray of a broken bone or an X-ray of your chest, but they're higher energy X-rays. And radiation works by attacking DNA in the nucleus of cancer cells. And cancer cells, because often they're trying to divide, are more sensitive to the effects of those X-rays than normal cells are. They lack some of the enzymes that allow them to repair the damage that radiation, these X-rays, can cause. So in effect, if you get the dosage right, you can kill cancer cells and allow the normal cells to recover. And that's how radiotherapy works.
I think it's probably worth us all trying to describe what happens when you are in the large room where the radiation is administered, because I certainly found it absolutely bizarre and very kind of high tech. Who wants to go first?
I don't mind going first.
Go ahead.
I thought I knew what radiation was because a couple of my friends had had it. They also had had chemo and they said, oh, it's a doddle. You won't feel anything. It's really quick. And so I just went in there thinking, oh, this is just going to be really easy. And actually, I found it really difficult, I think, because I had the mindset that I didn't think I needed it, and it was just something that was like a policy for breast cancer patients to go through, like tick a list, this is what we'll do. I don't think they actually looked at all the my case properly, but in fact I went in there and I didn't realise on the first visit that when you lie there, that that is the position they take that you always have to maintain. And you're already kind of suffering from the two operations and you're lifting your arms up for, everyone kept saying it's 2 minutes and you're not, you're lying there for 15 to 20, depending how long they take to get your position correct. And just lining up your body made me feel like a piece of meat again. And after not being in hospital for 6 weeks for my lymph nodes, I felt kind of like I was getting back to normal again and going back into that environment, lying on a bed and listening to the peeping sound and the machines just really scared me.
Can we describe the room and the kind of, this is how I found it. A very large room. The radiographers were in with me. You've been measured up really specifically for where the radiation rays, I think this is right, Elliot, please correct me, are going to be targeted. It's absolute specific measurements because it's targeting a very specific area. You lie on a bed, the radiographers leave the room because obviously it's radiation. And for me, anyway, I remember mine was kind of 7 years ago, a massive machine above me moved in an arc across me and I lay there for 20 minutes. As you say, you have to be really, really still. It felt like really high-tech machinery and high-tech treatment. Is that a fair description, Elliot?
And I think that is. I think the scan that you have beforehand is to localise the area that you want to treat.
Yeah, and then I didn't talk about any prep there. That's right. That was just the actual physical, what happened to me on the day sort of thing.
And then when you have your treatments, the idea is reproducing that same treatment day on day, aiming to exactly the same area day on day. And often that's the whole breast, but there are different ways of treating breast cancer depending upon what type of breast cancer you have. So that, for example, after a mastectomy, you might still require radiotherapy treatment if your lymph nodes are involved.
How was it for you?
Very similar to you. I found it very clinical. It was freezing cold where I was. I remember lying there from the waist up with no clothes on, freezing and keeping still. I was just paranoid about it. It took so much energy, you know, even to flinch your fingers. I was worried about moving my, closing my eyes or, you know, it was quite petrifying. That whole, the first few sessions were anyway. And then once you get into it, you've kind of relaxed a bit, don't you? And the noise, it was very loud. I do remember that. The
Gosh,
clunking.
I don't remember the noise.
Do you remember the clunking when it goes over?
The big machine.
Not yeah.
Really, no,
mine didn't clunk.
Oh, mine there clunked.
It was more like a mechanical kind of smooth sound.
It was a strange. It was weird. I just kind of lay there thinking, right, well, I've just got to get on with it because this is what I've got to do. And that's how I did it. But it was very cold. I do remember it being freezing.
It's interesting, Christina, that you say you were thinking you were only having this because this was what happens when you have breast cancer, that you didn't really need it, that there was a kind of tick box mentality, which, if I'm allowed to say this, there wouldn't have been, would there?
No.
Radiotherapy is absolutely specifically designed for the individual and for your cancer. At what point, we should say as well, you have consecutive sessions and it can be over 2 weeks, 3 weeks, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then the next week. Why does it have to be like that, Elliot?
Well, most radiotherapy courses are designed so that radiographers don't have to work at the weekends. So most radiotherapy is given 5 days a week.
Right.
That's okay. Standard. And the fractionations have changed, but unfortunately...
What's changed?
Sorry, I apologise. The number of treatments that you receive has changed, but that came in around about the time when COVID came in as the result of a study that showed that 5 treatments was often as good as 15 treatments for women.
Okay, well, that's so interesting because I had 30 sessions of radiotherapy.
Oh, wow.
Unless I've got that wrong. But honestly, it seemed to go on forever.
No, it does go, yeah.
I complained about why I wasn't given just 5 sessions. And in fact, in the second week, I actually asked to speak to someone who knew. And she explained to me that I was actually getting, I think they said I was getting 40 fractions. I was getting exactly the same as I know a colleague who only had a week. Mm-hmm. And she said, the difference with yours is because you had an implant and we gave you an implant because we didn't think your lymph nodes were infected and you were grade 1. We actually are taking care of your implant. So your treatment has been divided up into 15 sessions rather than 5.
And the link between the radiation and an implant is my understanding, Elliot, that the radiation can make, not always, can make an implant harden. Is that correct?
Radiotherapy can certainly cause contractures in implants, but I would suggest that the reason that you got 15 treatments rather than 5 treatments was because you had the lymph nodes in your neck treated. And when we treat the lymph nodes in the neck, we haven't yet got the results of the studies to show that it's safe to give treatment to the neck in 5 rather than 15 treatments. We have the evidence to show it's safe to give it to the breast area, but not to the neck area. So 40 units, 40 gray is the unit that we use of radiation, is the same as 40 units in 15, is the same as 26 in 5 in terms of its effect. But we don't know the effect on the lymph nodes and whether it could damage the other important structures in your neck. And that's why at the moment we're still not doing that, although the early studies are suggesting that it will be just as effective and just as safe.
But you need more studies. Yeah.
We need the results of the studies, longer follow-up.
Okay, that's interesting. Christina, you've talked about the mental side of things a little. Fiona, what about, you were fine mentally, I think, but what about physically?
Well, physically, I struggled. I tried to have my sessions. I was really lucky that I was able to get them kind of mid to late morning, which meant that the commute down, I was doing 45 minutes there and 45 minutes back. And I also had family took me, which was amazing, family and friends, which helped a lot because I didn't have to worry about the driving side of it. So initially, the first week, I felt okay. The second week, I developed a chest infection, probably not related to the radio. But I ended up getting headaches. And then I found myself in the afternoon quite tired. I couldn't necessarily fall asleep, but I would rest, definitely rest. The tiredness is what got me, I think, more than anything.
Why can it make you tired?
It's a little bit, I always tell patients, it's a little bit like sitting out in the sunshine for a period of time, because the sun's a form of radiation. And if you lie on a sunbed for an hour, you usually feel quite dopey and you want to go in and have a snooze. And it's very similar. Any form of radiation shone at the body makes the body feel tired. But explaining that in physical terms, I think, is quite difficult.
Right. What about the risks of radiation causing cancer? What do you say to patients who might have that worry?
So as part of the consent process, we should always tell patients that there is a small risk that radiation can cause different types of cancer. I mean, I normally quantify that as somewhere around 0.5%. So one in every 200 women that I treat might in the future develop a different type of cancer as a result of the treatment that I'm giving. But clearly, the doctors and the team think that the benefits outweigh the risks. Otherwise, we wouldn't be recommending the treatment for you.
Mm. There are other physical side effects. For example, potentially rib fractures, potentially the skin being burned, although I understand that is becoming less of an issue because the treatment is getting better. Is that right?
Well, I grew up in a period when I was trained where we would give 25 to 30 treatments, and actually skin burns were far more common then than they are around about the turn of the century. 2002, 2003, we were moved over to 15 treatments, and then latterly, as I said, and around 2020, we've moved over to 5 treatments, and skin burns now are really the exception rather than the rule.
Right.
And we don't see those very often. I think part of that is an awareness that the skin can burn and women take more care than perhaps they used to. And part of that is the change in the way we deliver the radiotherapy treatment, and even more modern radiotherapy. We used to use old cobalt machines back in the 1990s, and that would give a higher skin dose because of the technical aspects of the radiation than with more modern linear accelerator radiotherapy.
And how do you end up fracturing a rib?
Again, if you give enough dose to the rib doesn't like it.
Okay.
And certainly with old-fashioned radiotherapy, with cobalt treatments, which use lower energy x-rays, we did occasionally see rib fractures. I have to say, I've never seen a rib fracture, although I do consent my patients for it.
I do feel like if you know nothing about radiotherapy and you're listening to this now, you may be feeling pretty petrified. This is my experience of radiotherapy. It was a complete pain in the ass having to drive 40 minutes there and 40 minutes back after I'd been to work in the morning and having got up at 4 o'clock. The actual radiotherapy bit itself was, for me, a breeze, particularly when I compared it to chemotherapy. It was easy. It was fine. My skin didn't burn. I felt a bit tired, but then everyone's always knackered anyway. And I accepted it as an extra bit of insurance, so I felt grateful for it. But I appreciate it's different for everybody. What are the things, Christina, that you use to help with the mental blocks that you were having with radiotherapy?
So in the beginning, I took my husband, probably not a great idea, because he just sat there very emotional and making me feel more nervous.
Yeah.
So I started taking girlfriends, and that was much easier. They talked to me and I relaxed once I got in there. And I actually started visualizing my Qigong moves, which is all about visualizing a golden light, rising up a tree and flourishing into kind of blossoms. And that helped get through the x-ray bit. And then once the machine changed to the sizzling kind of radiation, I actually...
By the way, I did not hear a sizzling sound when I was saying that makes it sound like people are literally on fire.
Oh, no, they're not on fire.
They're not on fire. It's just the sound that you heard.
Yeah, like a gentle kind of... I don't know. It's just like... you hear. And
it's not like frying sausages frying pan.
You don't actually feel any heat.
No.
It's actually, like you say, it's harmless. You don't feel anything. But I think in my head, I was thinking, this is not a good thing I'm having, even though I knew it was doing a good job. So I actually would say, this healing light is healing me and making me better all the way through till it stopped.
And it worked?
And that definitely worked. By the second week, I was much more relaxed. My problem was my position wasn't great and my neck was a little bit twisted, and I kept having headaches due to the bones being not in a comfortable position.
Can I suggest, Elliot, and obviously we weren't there and we don't know every detail about your case, but Can I suggest, had there been more conversations about the process and about the effects, that might have helped Christina, or not necessarily?
Well, I suppose over many years, I've always found that patients take away what they want to take away, and sometimes patients are anxious, and really it's about trying to calm the patients down before consenting them, and sometimes you have that responsibility. Mm. And sometimes that's been done for you by the surgeon. If you're lucky enough to have an empathetic surgeon, they'll already have warned you about a lot about what your oncologist is going to say, so you're already slightly more relaxed when you actually assess a patient. Mm. It is important, and you rely also very much on the experience of the radiographers, who are the healthcare professionals that actually supervise the treatments on a day-to-day basis, and you'll often find they're very good at trying to calm patients down and warning them about what to expect, and that's perhaps not surprising, given that I suspect a half of all radiotherapy given in the country is given to ladies with breast cancer.
Yeah. And you're right about the radiographers. Certainly in my experience, I adored them. They were so friendly. Obviously, you know, you see them every day. So you become, you find out about their lives. And I remember them saying to me, because I was doing videos of my treatment, which are on YouTube, if anybody wants to go and have a look. And the radiographers were so happy to be included in the videos because they felt they did not get the attention they deserved when it comes to treatment for cancer. It's a really important part of the treatment, isn't it? Let's talk about the thing. You've talked about the mental side of things and what you visualized and how that really helped you. What are the other tips that you might have for listeners that might help them as they prepare for radiotherapy and as they are undergoing radiotherapy?
Gosh, I would say definitely for me, the frequency of radiotherapy in my head helped my day better than when I was on chemo.
Okay.
Because with chemo, you never really quite knew how you were going to feel. So you never really knew if you planned something for the day, whether you'd be able to do it, or whether you felt like eating, whether you didn't. I found radio, it slotted into your day. But the thing for me that helped was because I had my treatment and surgery in Hong Kong, my chemo and my surgery, I did radio in Cornwall. I found actually having family members and friends offering to take me for those sessions was something that was really great. You chat in the car on the way there and back. And if I felt up to it, we might go and have a coffee afterwards. And they also, I think, friends and family, when you're doing chemo, it's a very solo journey.
Because it doesn't have to be.
No, it doesn't have to be. But I think maybe because I was living in Hong Kong, it was slightly different. But I found radio, your friends could help. Mm. They did feel part of, and family could be part of your journey by taking you and picking you up and being there with you.
Yeah. Giving you support and also making it slightly more sociable.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. But that was the great thing about it. Oh, well, one of the things I was totally shocked about, I didn't know that I would have tattoos. So when I went in to be marked up, I thought they were marking me up on the machine. Mm. I didn't realise they were actually going to be giving me
a tattoo. No. We need to explain this. Yeah. It's not like a great big butterfly
something
on
pin.
Your chest.
It's a pencil dot.
A pencil dot. Yeah. And the reason for that, Elliot?
Well, it's your focal point to set up how you're setting up the radiation fields. And so classically, we've always used two tattoos, one in the midline and one on the sort of side of just underneath your armpit. But there are systems now that allow you to deliver radiotherapy without tattoos as well. So camera systems have been developed that allow you again to reproduce the treatment absolutely the same each day. And that's what the tattoos are about. They're purely to allow the radiographers to set up the radiation field so they know they're treating exactly the same place each day. And they really are very small. Yeah. Sometimes we struggle to find them.
Yeah. Sorry, let's go back to tips for how to cope with preparing for it and also undergoing it. What else would you add, Christina?
I definitely think the first time when you go in, you need to be in a really comfortable position. I think when he said, you get into a comfortable position and relax. Mm. I actually was so tense because I didn't know what was going on. I literally pushed myself into a position that was obviously not right for my neck.
Yeah.
And they said, you should have actually have asked for something underneath because it's too late once you've done that first scan. Mm-hmm. So I would say, essentially, get into a comfortable position where you're not pushing your back into the bed. You're just relaxing back into the bed. And then you will feel relaxed all the way through and you won't get any pain, which causes headaches. Mm-hmm. And
you, Elliot, have a 6-rule routine for anyone having radiotherapy.
Well, I always tell patients a little bit about skincare. So I tell them to use moisturiser twice a day to keep the skin nice and supple, to use simple non-perfume soaps to avoid shaving and deodorant under the armpit, to pat dry, not to rub dry, to avoid underwired bras because the wire underneath the fold underneath your breast can increase the pressure there and damage the skin, and to shower rather than to bath or to have a shallow bath. In other words, you can get your breast wet, but not to soak it during radiotherapy treatment, and for a week or two afterwards whilst everything is settling down. Mm. 6 golden rules, I call it.
Okay, fair enough. Very, very good advice. I wonder if I'm going to ask you in a moment what the future holds for this kind of treatment, because we can see the progress and the advancements being made. I wonder if you can both talk, Fiona and Christina, about, I mean, you just finished last Friday, how you feel now. Is it, I'm not going to put words in your mouth. You tell me how you feel now. Your treatment is complete. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. I actually, really weirdly, I really relaxed into the third week. But by the Friday, I was a bit nervous again. And I think it was that being released from my treatment and thinking I'm on my own now. And I haven't got something I'm having that's protecting me. I know I've got to start taking this letrozole. Mm-hmm. So that's the next stage. But they've told me I can have a couple of weeks break so that the radiation, which is still working, and I can see it's still working because I still get the hot heat on my skin in
it.
The evenings.
Yeah.
But I think I was more, I'm now just more anxious about the whole thing of, has it all gone and will it come back? Right. Rather than I've finished my treatment and I should be looking positively. I think I've just got to get over that little hurdle. Maybe it's too soon.
Maybe it is. And it takes time, doesn't it? Again, I'm not a medical professional, but Elliot, tell me if this is right or not. If you've had surgery, if you've had, did you have chemo?
No. I had, because my oncotype came back low.
That's right, you didn't need it, that's right. So you've had surgery, which is the main part of your treatment, and you've had radiotherapy, the sessions that you've just described. At this moment of time, it is almost 100% likely there'll be no evidence of cancer cells in your body. Is that fair?
I think that's very fair.
Yeah.
Even though I could have got cancer, say, in my stomach. So every time I get a pain, I start panicking that it's gone into my stomach or it's gone into my pelvis.
And I think that's normal. I really do think that is absolutely usual.
Yeah, it's like a little worm in the back of your head that kind of comes out every now and then when you hear something, when you feel something and you think, oh, gosh, I hope it's not cancer.
I always try and reassure patients because it is a very common concern at the end of radiotherapy. Every little niggle you're going to think is related to your cancer. But your cancer was relatively small in your breast. And if there was any evidence of there having been a problem elsewhere in your body, they'd have treated you far more aggressively than they have treated you. And I'm not belittling the intensive treatment you've been through, but you would have had to have chemotherapy clearly if it was another part of the body. And for something to be big enough to cause the sort of symptoms that you're describing, it would probably have to be bigger than the lump that was in your breast in the first place. And that just doesn't make sense intuitively. And that usually calms patients down when they hear it. And I always say to them as well that clearly, just having finished your treatment, it's a very emotional time. And of course, every little niggle you're going to attribute to your cancer. And with time, that generally does improve. And I know it's an old adage, but it's true. Time is a great healer.
I can say that from my experience. I was diagnosed in 2015, finished treatment in 2016. It was treatment that lasted 301 days. So it wasn't even a year. in my lifetime, assuming I live, you know, to 80, fingers crossed, touch wood, all that, that is a blip. That is a blip, isn't it? And I totally understand the kind of the emotions when it's over, when you finish the radiotherapy, and fingers crossed, that is it. So there's this amazing, for me anyway, there was this amazing euphoria. I could not stop crying, and that was tears of joy. I feel emotional now just talking about it. Absolute gratitude to the staff. And also, shit, I'm on my own now.
Exactly.
Although I wasn't, because you're not, you know, it's 5 years before you're officially in remission, so you go back every year. You can, you know, you've got hopefully good relations with your surgeon, with your breast cancer nurse, with the radiographers, etc. And as time passes, you feel a niggle, and it's not the first thing that comes into your head. Oh my God, I've got cancer again. It just isn't. And as time passes, certainly for me, when I woke up in the morning, the first thing I thought about after a while wasn't cancer. And you don't even realise that that's happened. But it's only when you look back at the last few months or the last year or the last 2 years, you think, shit, I haven't thought about cancer for a while. And it may not feel like that for you. And it may never feel like that for you. I'm just telling you my experience over a few years.
I'm hoping mine will. hoping I'm getting there. I had a couple of weeks ago where something's come up and it's been there a while. I went this morning actually to get it checked, and there's no evidence of cancer. So I got on the train and I just, you know, your whole body just relaxes. And I just think, right now I've got to move on. This is, I can't keep thinking that everything I've got is cancer. So I'm hoping this morning was my turning.
I
really hope, because it needs to. I've kind of 5 years next year. I feel like I need to just park it.
Can I just say, I think because they took my result and then decided not to give me chemo, because that's why we were waiting before we did the radiotherapy. I think, I know a friend who actually asked for chemo because she said she wanted that actual double, even more security. So I feel sometimes, was my result correct? Have I got the right result? And I think it was great that I didn't have to have chemotherapy, but we have to just trust science with something like a result.
Sure.
And that, I think, is always a little bit in the back of my mind.
I understand that. It is hard.
Because I've kind of escaped the worst one, the chemotherapy. But I'm not having the security that it killed everything in the rest of my body. Yeah. I could have been harbouring another cancer, which I didn't get tested for, because I know I kept asking for a chest, a lung and a bone density, and they wouldn't give it me. They said they don't just give x-rays kind of willy-nilly. But I had a dreadful experience because my brother died during at the same time as my treatment.
Oh my goodness.
Of lung and brain cancer. So mine was more of a mental issue of watching someone die in 2 months. We got our diagnosis the same day.
Goodness.
It was very traumatic.
Absolutely traumatizing.
Yes, that must be.
And he was younger than me. And he had no side effects.
And I get why you're worried whether it's gone somewhere else. I totally get that. You know, when it's family as well, like that's
very close. Yeah.
But mine is a very unusual case, and I've been having therapy with Macmillan to kind of help me get through that, because we were totally different cases, and that's what I've realised.
Yeah, and everyone is different. And for what it's worth, and again, Elliot, please tell me if I'm wrong, I had chemo. It was quite an aggressive, I was told, aggressive form of infusion. That was 7 years ago. Like, there might be cancer cells in my body right now because the chemo was so long ago. And I could spend time thinking about that and worrying about that. And I have made a positive decision in my own life that I am not going to spend any time worrying about what if cancer comes back. What if this? Oh, could that be cancer? What if? Because life's short and we don't know how long we've got. So let's just live.
We do need to live. You're absolutely right. You're yeah, we just all have to kind of hope, trust in what we've been given, and then...
And I'm not saying that's easy to get to that point, but I think it's possible if you want to.
I definitely think time is a healer, and which is one of the reasons why I also carried on teaching. I was doing Zoom classes all the way through my whole treatment, even because mentally it helped me also think of the positivity of the mind instead of looking at the negative side all the time.
Yeah. Can I ask you, Elliot, because there's such a lot of debate about can a positive state of mind actually affect the outcome of your treatment? Now, in practical, factual, scientific terms, surely it can't, but it must have an effect somehow.
I think that's a very difficult thing to prove, and I think with too many confounding factors. Certainly, I've had patients who've been very positive who unfortunately have had problems subsequent to their treatment. And the other side of that, I've had patients who worried the whole time and they haven't had a recurrence of their cancer. But I do always try and encourage my patients to have a positive mental attitude simply because I think that helps them through their treatment. But everyone's different. And, you know, I'm lucky enough not to have had cancer. And it's always very difficult, therefore, to... perhaps appreciate and empathise with patients as to what they're going through. And I'm always struck when I talk about patients and they tell me about their fears and their concerns, that silly things that just wouldn't in any way normally affect me or make me think about cancer, I can suddenly see that it can affect patients. And you've got to be almost constantly be thinking about how something that wouldn't normally cause you as a person concern could cause someone who's going through treatment for cancer a concern. It's a real eye-opener.
Yeah. Can I ask you then finally, what does the future hold when it comes to radiotherapy? Could there be even more condensed sessions, shorter bursts, fewer patients needing it? What do you think?
I think it's important to understand, given what we've spoken about already, that everything in cancer is evidence-based. It's one of the most evidence-based of all the disciplines within medicine. And that means that studies dictate what we're going to try and do and what we're not going to try and do. And we wouldn't ever make any changes unless there was a body of evidence behind it to show that whatever changes we'd made were safe. So 30 treatments down to 15 treatments down to 5 treatments now for many women with breast cancer, there's a big evidence base behind all of that. Potentially partial breast irradiation for certain types of cancers. Again, that's come through and has been shown to be effective, although there hasn't been as much of a move away from whole breast radiotherapy as perhaps one might have anticipated. But certainly women with large breasts who are more prone to getting skin burns might benefit from only having part of their breast irradiated, the area where the lump was. That's safe now for certain women. Moving away from free breathing during radiotherapy and allowing women to hold their breath during radiotherapy and using special equipment will mean less of the scattered radiation affecting the lung and the heart and the liver, depending upon where it's used for treatment on the left and the right sides. We're going to move over to 5-fraction treatment, I suspect, fairly quickly for treating the lymph nodes as well. The other side of that is that we're going to end up actually perhaps treating slightly more women because of the results of a big meta-analysis that was recently published in The Lancet that showed that's one of our big medical journals, that showed that even if you only have 1 or 2 lymph nodes involved, giving radiotherapy to the breast or to the chest wall area and to those lymph node areas does have an impact on reducing the risk of recurrence of breast cancer in the future. So whilst we're always trying to limit the amount of radiation and indeed chemotherapy using Oncotype and genetic testing, sometimes we show that we do need to do it and we have to rein back on trying to reduce the amount we're giving. Yeah. We've been so successful at improving the success of treatment of breast cancer. When I started, 50% of women got their cancer back, and now only about 10 to 15% of women get their cancer back. That we've tried to rein back how much of the extra treatment we give, but we have to do that very carefully. Because obviously we make an adjustment without having shown that it's safe to make that adjustment. 5-10 years down the line, we'll see the impact of that, and that can be quite dangerous. So whatever we do very carefully, and we discuss it all very carefully, and there are some very clever people who design these studies, and they very carefully follow the patients up for many, many years to make sure that when we do introduce these changes, that they're the right changes and it's the best thing for women who are going through what is a very difficult condition.
Thank you. All of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I want to wish you so much love and strength. I really do. And positivity, if I can say that. And I don't say it in a glib way at all.
No.
Like some people do. That, oh, be positive, as if that's the only thing that's going to get you through. Come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for being so open. Really appreciate it. And Elliot Sims, Dr. Elliot Sims, thank you very much for your expertise and your contributions, all of which have been really, really useful and hopefully will help lots of people listening. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Then Came Breast Cancer is brought to you by the Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity, which provides practical, emotional and psychological support for anyone diagnosed with the disease. It's a Factory original and 6 Foot Six production.
Our podcast is intended to be a message of support for everyone who has been touched by breast cancer, and that's why our guests share their personal and unique stories with you. They express their personal opinions, which don't necessarily reflect those of Future Dreams or our sponsors. Our guests' individual stories do not constitute medical advice and shouldn't be treated in any way as a substitute for professional expertise or a consultation with healthcare professionals. This podcast is not offering to treat your cancer, but it is trying to help by talking about it. So hopefully you realise that you are not alone.